Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Common Sense Radio. And today we're going to discuss, we'll wrap up XFL Week 10. The regular season was completed this past weekend. And a preview of the playoffs. Also, we apologize. Yesterday we had a show. We were not able to get on the air. There was a some weather in the area that was creating intermittent connection issues with the internet. And because of that, it was difficult to sign on and off at the time. But the show is the same one that was supposed to be yesterday. No new information, really. Also, we're going to discuss the, maybe have an MVP debate. Is it A.J. McCarron? Is it Ben DiNucci? Or is it someone else? Call in at, our guest call in is 563-999-3409. If you have an opinion on that, or you think it should be someone else, or you think the whole MVP discussion is ridiculous. Whatever the case. So this past weekend was a very climactic and exciting weekend for the XFL and spring football. For the first time in 22 years, the XFL completed a season. You say, well, you know, big deal. But this is the third iteration of the XFL, the first one back in 2001. Honestly, how many people watched that? I did. And I can barely remember it now. I remember the Saturday night games. Don't remember the Sunday games too well, nor the playoffs. It's just, it's not coming to me right now. But I remember some of the Saturday night games. And, of course, the XFL from 3 years ago folded midseason. But this one I think has been the best so far. It completed its season. It had an exciting playoff stretch. But on the one hand, it was a very exciting and climactic final stretch there. On the other hand, it was a little bit anticlimactic because of the, well, let's talk about the elephant in the room, the playoff structure. You can look at it from at least two different ways. One, the way they did it is probably the best way overall because most of the time the divisions or conferences will have parity. So there won't be a big disparity between teams missing the playoffs and teams making the playoffs. This year they got it wrong. Of course, that's 2020 hindsight. Nobody knew going into the season what the results would be as far as the playoff teams and their records. So let's start with the games from this past weekend. In the first game, St. Louis Battlehawks, they finished 7-3. They won 53-28 over the Orlando Guardians. The 53 points is an XFL record in terms, and I believe that's all time, not just this season, but most points ever for an XFL team. A.J. McCarron had 493 passing yards, six touchdown passes. And the Battlehawks, the reason why they scored so many points, of course, was they needed to score so many points in order to have the edge in the tiebreaker against Seattle. Now, that's another story. And just to finish up, Orlando finishes at 1-9. But it turns out that the 28 points they did score made the difference with the tiebreaker. In the second game, D.C. held on to defeat the San Antonio Brahmins 29-28. The D.C. closes out the year at regular season at 9-1, best record in the league. San Antonio finishes at a disappointing 3-7, especially when they had a chance to make the playoffs. And the Brahmins had a chance right at the end. Their kicker, Romo, had I believe it was a 53-yard field goal attempt. Had that gone in, they would have been in the playoffs because the following day, the Houston Roughnecks defeated the Arlington Renegades 25-9. Houston finishes at 7-3, Arlington at 4-6. Now, this game was, after the San Antonio game, this game was meaningless in terms of the playoff race. Houston and Arlington had both already clinched the playoffs. And then Houston had clinched the top seed. So the Roughnecks did not play their starter, Brandon Silvers, in the game against Arlington. The Renegades did play Luis Perez, and the Renegades' offense did not look good. It was struggle in the red zone, struggle in the third down in short yardage situations, just overall struggle. Struggle in pass protection, in the passing game, timing on the passes and the routes. So they have a few days right now. Today's Thursday. They have 2 days to get it together as they go down to Houston to face the Roughnecks. And special congratulations to Wade Phillips. He led his Roughnecks to a 7-3 record, and they were undefeated in the South. I know what's the big deal with that. They were 6-0, a 6-0 record in the South. And then in your fourth game, the Seattle Sea Dragons clinched the fourth and final playoff spot with a 28-9 win over the Vegas Vipers. So Seattle will face DC in the Northern semifinal. And obviously, Houston will face Arlington in the Southern semifinal. Now, Seattle was swept by D.C., and, of course, D.C. was undefeated in their division. But both the games were very close. The Seattle-D.C. game a few weeks ago was, I believe, 1 point. In opening game, Seattle had the lead most of the game. I think they lost by 4 points in the first game. So that's the semifinal. Saturday evening, and we'll get the schedule. Let's pull up the schedule here. The Saturday game is the Southern, semifinal, and Sunday will be the Northern semifinal. Let's get a schedule on that. I know when and where they're playing. All right, so in the South, Arlington at Houston. That'll be at 6 o'clock Central, Saturday evening, on ESPN2. The Northern semi, or they call it a division championship, will be Sunday, 2 o'clock Central, and that will be on ESPN. The winners will go on to play each other in the championship game, May 13th, so almost 2 weeks from Sunday, 2 weeks from Sunday, this Sunday, down in the Alamo Dome. All right, so we're going to just take a short break here. When we come back, we'll get into some of the stats and see who deserves the MVP, at least out of the offensive players. We'll be right back after this short break. Okay, welcome back to Common Sense Radio. Today we're discussing the XFL regular season finale. And we've already discussed who the playoff teams are. Your final four are set. Arlington at Houston Saturday evening. And then Seattle at D.C. Sunday afternoon. So we're moving on to the MVP discussion. Now, I think, in my opinion, it should be Ben DiNucci. The reason for that is he had the most passing yards at 2671. But now that I look at these stats, I may be wrong. It should be most likely A.J. McCarron. A.J. McCarron had less passing yards at 2150, and he missed one game. But DiNucci played all 10 games. A.J. played 9 games. But A.J.'s TD to interception ratio was outstanding. 24 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. DiNucci had 20 touchdowns, but threw 13 interceptions. Not good. The other possible candidate would be Jordan Te'amu, quarterback of D.C. Not as many passing yards, 1894, but a 14-3 touchdown interception ratio. So not bad. Not bad. And you have to consider they were mostly, DC was mostly a rushing team. So let's look at some of the rushing stats here. Now, where I think where DiNucci might have the edge overall against McCarron is in rushing. DiNucci had 53 carries for 305 yards, and he converted 18 first downs. McCarron's mostly a pocket quarterback. I don't even see where his stats are here. So he did not go. Oh, well, no. Okay, he had 29 carries for 100 yards. Not bad. And he converted on 6 first down. So not bad, but overall, that's a tough one because McCarron's passing stats, TD interceptions are much better than DiNucci's. However, DiNucci's overall passing yardage and rushing yardage combined along with first down conversions is the tops in the league. So if you have an opinion, call in. Call us up. Who do you think should be the MVP? So we're going to take another short break here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more XFL, a little bit more on the team stats. We'll be right back after this. All right, welcome back to Common Sense Radio, and we're discussing the XFL regular season finale. We already discussed who possible MVPs are. Let's look at some of the defensive stats, though. Who had some good stats on defense here? We already mentioned the quarterbacks. The first interceptions, let's see, Ajean Harris of the Roughnecks, he had the most interceptions with 5, followed by Joe Powell with the Renegades, he had 4, and Michael Joseph had 4. Tackles, total tackles, Jordan Williams of the Brahmas had the most with 89, 38 solo and 51 assists. Followed by Roughnecks linebacker Tamonte Beckett, 63 total tackles, 34 solo, 29 assists. C.J. Avery of the Vipers, 62 total. And Emmanuel Ellerby, 62. And Donald Payne, Ellerby of the Roughnecks. And Donald Payne of the Renegades had 61. But Jordan Williams had a total of 12 tackles for losses. Pretty good. Then over in forced fumbles, Pita, forgive me if I don't pronounce it correctly, Pita Tamoipanu, linebacker on the Vipers, had 4 forced fumbles and a fumble recovery. John Deca, who's our skipper, David Bellamy and Travis Feeney each had 3. Forced fumbles. Feeney had 2 fumble recoveries from the Battle Hawks. And in terms of sacks, let's see who had the most sacks. Let's try to find who the sack leaders were here. Well, let's go to special teams. Parker Romo, the man that missed the field goal at the end of the game for the Brahmas, he had the highest field goal percentage. He made 17 out of 19. His longest was 57, but one of those misses was in the final play against the Defenders. Taylor Russolino kicker for the Renegades, 16 of 19 at a long of 56. Dominic Ellerby of the Sea Dragons, 14 of 18, long of 54. And then for kick returns, not too much in terms of touchdowns. Fred Brown of the Brahmas had a kickoff return for a touchdown. And for punt returns, no one. So a lot of that could be because of the XFL rules where there isn't really a lot of action on the returns. Obviously, you can tell like the kickoffs, the special two special teams are almost right next to each other. So it's hard to get a lot of downfield blocking on those returns. And on the punts, they're not allowed to move until, I believe, the guy catches the ball. So it's hard to do. Let's look at some of the team stats. Now, in terms of passing, the Sea Dragons led the league with 2,630 yards, most of that being from Ben DiNucci, followed by the Guardians. That's surprising. I guess being behind so much, they had to throw the ball, but they had 2,311 total passing yards, 18 touchdowns, which was tied for third in the league, 18 passing touchdowns. That's not bad considering they were a 1-9 team. The leading to obviously the defenders were the team that led the league in rushing with 1,408 yards by far, almost over 400 yards past some of the other teams. They had 15 rushing touchdowns. Closest team would have been the Roughnecks with 13, and then the Guardians with 11. So the Guardians had quite a number of touchdowns. That tells you that their defense needs some work, considering they were 1-9. And I will say about the Guardians and Terrell Buckley, they did play very competitive down the stretch from the game they defeated DC on until the rest of the season. It was fairly competitive, even if they didn't win. Team with the poorest offense is the Renegades. They had only 5 passing touchdowns this year, and then 7 rushing touchdowns. So a total of, I think they had a couple of defensive touchdowns. Let's see here. Yeah, they had 2 interception returns for touchdowns and a fumble return for a touchdown. So overall, they only had 15 touchdowns in 10 games, which is, 1.5 touchdowns per game? I guess that shows you how good their defense was, because that's really hard to win, although they weren't a winning team. They're 4-6, but even be that close or have a chance at the playoffs, when you consider the Guardians, who had 29 touchdowns and finished 1-9, tells you you can win with your defense. Defense can keep you in games. All right, so if anyone has any questions, feel free to ask us. We're discussing XFL. Week 10, the playoffs are this weekend. What do you think about the playoff format? I know a lot of people aren't happy with it. I don't blame them. I don't blame the Battlehawks fans. I don't blame the Renegades fans for being happy they're in the playoffs. But I do think that the XFL should change it for not just next year, but going forward. And, look, no one knows how the teams are going to end up, particularly at the beginning of the year. No one knew the North would be that much better than the South. And by the way, the head-to-head record was 3-13. South only had 3 wins, but no one knew that ahead of time. So, unfortunately, that was that's the playoff format this year. But they do need to change it because the league should want its best teams in the playoffs. So that means 2 division winners and the next top 2 records. Of course, you have tiebreakers after that. So that would have put St. Louis and Seattle in the playoffs. The USFL, I believe, should do the same just to make sure this doesn't happen to them. Now, I know last year they had the perfect setup where their division winners, their first-place teams were not both 9-1. Second place, wild card, were 6-4, so there was no issue there. But just in case it happens again, you want to make sure your top four teams get in, regardless of division. And it's good for the game because you have your better teams in there. So any comments, any questions? We did an episode on this a few weeks ago about the crossover rule, or having more of a playoff crossover where you didn't have this current setup. Now over in the USFL, they still have that, and we don't. Excuse me, we don't know how that will end up. Just some historical stats here. Now, if we're counting the 2020 season, the five games, here are the records of the seven teams who are currently in the XFL who are around in 2020. The Battlehawks end up with an overall record of 10-5. The Brahmas are 3-7, and they were not in the league in 2020. DC is at 12-3, tied for the best record with the Roughnecks, who are also 12-3. The Renegades are 6-9. The Guardians are 4-11. Sea Dragons end up 8-7. And the Vipers, 3-12. So just a continuity there. And then the eighth team, who was in the XFL in 20, were the Wildcats. They were, I believe, 2-3 in 2020. So the Roughnecks and Defenders apparently have the top all-time XFL record, both at 12-3. They're also the favorites to end up in the championship game. So you could say the winner of that will be the top XFL team of all time. And it's very short history. But I do think next season they do need to change the playoff format where you have the division winners and then top two wild card teams, and then you seed them 1-4. The debate would be, should the both division winners be 1-2 automatically, or should it just be straight 1-4? So, for example, in the situation this year, if Houston had ended up with a worse record than either than the 3-4 team, would they be seeded lower? You know, if they ended up like 5-5, and should they get a home game against St. Louis, for example, which was 7-3, even if St. Louis didn't win its division? So it's up in a debate. I don't know if I go that far. I'd probably keep the division winners at 1-2, and more than likely you're going to have the top two teams be the division winners anyway. It's rare that a wild card team will be better than a division winner. Anyways, that's the and I just wanted to add a programming note. The XFL playoff games and the championship game are all going to be, if you're listening in your car, you're driving, you're traveling, they'll be on Sirius XM Channel 81. If you're not able to get to a TV, or you have a radio, satellite radio, or you're traveling, you can listen to it on satellite radio. All right. So that's, without any callers or questions, I guess that's all we got for today. We don't have much else. So we will be look for a USFL program possibly tomorrow. Try to get one up here, weather permitting, of course, internet connection permitting. As the USFL moves into week three, it's already dire for some of the teams. Just a preview, we have two undefeated teams in the South, Birmingham and New Orleans, who are facing each other this week. And then you have two winless teams, Houston and Memphis, both 0-2. The loser of that is, the winner of that's going to be in decent shape and only two games out of first. But the losing team will already be three games out first, with only two games left until midseason. So I guess they would be, you know, they would still have a chance at the second place. But with both New Orleans and Birmingham undefeated, both those teams might run away with the playoff spots. And over in the North, Michigan will be hosting its first game at home in Detroit and in Michigan in, I believe, 39 years. They were the USFL champions in 1983. Excuse me. And then they folded or merged with the Oakland Invaders after the 1984 season, so they did not play in 85. So they have not played in Michigan in 39 years. And they will be I'm not sure who they're – but anyways, they actually defeated the Stars this past weekend. It was an impressive game, 24-10. I was a little surprised. I thought the Panthers might win, but not by two touchdowns. The Generals bounced back with an impressive win over the Maulers at 20-3. And both those games are played at Canton, Ohio, which was very cold this past weekend. It looked like real football weather, like NFL weather. So we'll talk more about this tomorrow on the USFL program. That's all the time we have for today. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you enjoyed the XFL regular season. I still think the MVP should be DiNucci, but if you think it's McCarron, I can see why. He had a great TD interception ratio and overall an outstanding season. Unfortunately for the Battle Hawks, they did not make the playoffs. But great fan support for them. They had the highest number of fans, averaging somewhere around 33,000. I credit them for that. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Hope you have a good rest of your day. Bye-bye.